Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers got one. They get a wire-to-wire win in a series they've been ahead in for much of it. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Come out early, ready to go. I love their effort on the defensive end. I thought LeBron in particular had a lot of great rotations and deflections. And Lakers played well early on. The starting lineups have actually played each other fairly even. Where I thought was different in this game, I thought the LeBron-led groups and the AD-led groups were a lot better than before. And Lakers go up by double digits at halftime. Denver does hit a few of those Terminator shots where it's like Jokic won't miss, Michael Porter Jr. hits everything type of thing in the third quarter. But what was different, Mike, and many of the players post-game really spoke to this, was the Lakers scored with them rather than scoring in the high teens or low 20s in the third. Lakers have a 30-point third quarter and are able to hold on throughout the fourth. It was a game where we out-rebounded them, Mike, which has been a thing that you've been championing throughout the series. And so Lakers held on, get the win. What are your thoughts from game four victory?
I guess just for the sake of consistency, I'll start with the rebounding. And it's not necessarily just the raw number of the Lakers getting more physical rebounds. I think it ends up being 46 to 40, but they were up by 10 for a lot of the game. And for Anthony Davis to get 23 of those, or literally half of the Laker rebounds, and nobody else to get more than five, but you had at least everybody that played, all nine guys that played, got at least one rebound. Austin Reeves, who's been averaging, I think, five in the series, ends up getting just one. But like Hayes had three rebounds in his 6 minutes. And that's key. That's that extra little burst, I think, that they needed. Prince and Dinwiddie each grabbed a couple of rebounds in limited minutes. So it's just like also, I think, a reflection, though, of Denver playing their worst game. And Aaron Gordon had three rebounds.
After what, 19?
In the entire game.
Or after
game.
15? So, what did he have? Yeah.
Yeah, he had 15 in game three. Gordon, 29 points, 15 boards. He had five offensive rebounds in game three. So I think the Lakers get some credit for that, but it also felt in the building that I think really for the first time, other than Jokic, who just doesn't have a second speed, everybody else was just a little bit off and almost kind of like we can go back for game five. And that was the feeling that I had referenced on a previous podcast that I was so impressed Denver did not bring to game three. They came into game three with kind of that same sense of urgency. So I do expect that, you know, Aaron Gordon, who did have to play huge minutes, though, like he played 42 minutes. Porter played 40. So Malone was definitely going for it and definitely trying to spur his players on. But I didn't think that they had the same sense of urgency. And so that's going to be something the Lakers are certainly going to need to be aware of in game five. The Denver's level is going to be higher from the start. The other part of that, in the scoring, Pete, that you mentioned, and Anthony Davis specifically said that, well, yeah, we kept scoring. I thought that because the Lakers got more contributions, like Reeves and Russell were both efficient in this one. And I think they were collectively, they had 21 points each. It meant that LeBron didn't have to push as much kind of early in the game just to keep the Lakers ahead and to like, And at the same time, like LeBron had 18 shot attempts in the paint, and most of them were at the rim. And that is usually like a very targeted, effective, like LeBron was not wasting any time. He was getting the ball, boom, one step, whoever was guarding him and just kind of bullying into the paint. And the Lakers end up scoring, what's the paint points that they get? 72? That is a huge number. And that's the second straight game where they're scoring inside. So that I felt like LeBron had more legs to be able to do some of that in the fourth quarter. And that was because he got more help from his friends earlier on.
Yeah, this was a game where Denver clearly was not to the level they'd been in previous games. Although you'd have a hard time convincing me that that was true of every Nuggets player. Michael Porter Jr. was amazing again. Jokic was amazing again. And Murray, though he did not shoot efficiently, he scored in the 20s and was a focal point of their offense, right? And so Denver has a certain baseline level, Pete, that they can meet. But this game does show the importance of Aaron Gordon. And when Gordon is not at the level that he's been in the rest of the series, and we actually saw this in game one when he was in foul trouble, like Denver's a different team. And the ask on Gordon is pretty big. And I thought in game three, the Lakers let him off the hook a little bit by playing smaller in those bench units and allowing Denver to play the Gordon and Peyton Watson group without having a big on the floor to complement the Lakers. That was a thing that stood out to me this game as well, is that Darvin went back to the regular rotation. Hayes played a couple of shifts. They weren't long shifts, but he played. And I thought that helped reorganize the offense a little bit. They also went to Dinwiddie in those bench groups instead of Gabe. And I thought Dinwiddie's size is a better deterrent against Murray than Gabe.
And he was more assertive on offense too, Spencer was. Like, he had a couple of takes to the basket. He was not just like looking to pass as soon as he caught the ball.
Totally. And the point that Mike was making about LeBron having more in reserve wasn't just because D'Lo and Austin were scoring the ball. It was because they were handling the ball a fair amount more. And their on-ball work and D'Lo's shot making, of course, was huge. He made four threes, but I thought Austin's ability to get downhill and be a downhill player was something that the Lakers have not been getting a lot of from anyone besides LeBron and AD. And to have a third guy who was pressuring the paint and creating shots, he had that lob to AD. He had that drive and kick to Rui, who had that baseline corner cut for a layup. Those are the plays. And then Austin scored inside himself on little short jumpers. Those were the plays that I thought allowed LeBron to be more of an off-ball worker. And that saves his legs to be able to be that on-ball presence late in the game. And so to me, this was the most Lakers-y formula game that they've played all series. And they won by playing that style. So that was sort of my overall takeaway, is Denver was not at their best, but the Lakers certainly brought the blueprint of how they know that they can play, and they did it for a full game.
Lakers played good basketball, right? You can't control what the other team is going to bring to the table, but if you play like that and they don't, you're going to get the win. And you know, that was the first one in a while against them because of that. And I think that your point about the guards and more of the offense running through them and the benefit that it has on LeBron is spot on. I thought he was phenomenal in the post. I thought that was the most intentional, like, oh, LeBron's got Murray or KCP or someone smaller on him that he can body, then we're going to really go right at that and hammer the advantage. And to do that, though, you have to have, it's much easier to have a duck in where you don't have the ball in your hands, right? Where D'Lo or Austin have the ball in their hands, or AD out on the perimeter, and LeBron spots an opportunity against Peyton Watson and ducks in and posts him up, and they throw that post entry. And so I thought LeBron was great out of the post. But there was one play in the second quarter that really stood out to me in terms of, like, it would be great to be getting more of these earlier in the year, which is why you got to settle the lineup stuff. We'll talk about that later. But Hayes was in the game. It was the LeBron group, no AD. And the ball got swung to Jackson in the right corner. And of course, Denver is not guarding him there. If he wants to take a open corner three there, like, knock yourself out. But Jackson doesn't go for that. And he catches it and starts to dribble toward the handoff. And these are in minutes where it's Christian Brown guarding D'Lo and Aaron Gordon is guarding LeBron. And so in this whole, like, there's no natural you've got a size and athleticism advantage. In fact, it's the opposite. And those are exactly the buckets, those are exactly the times where you have to use your system in order to create opportunity more than that natural player-to-player advantage. And so Jackson catches it and he wants to flow into a handoff with LeBron, but Gordon is playing ball denial. He's top blocking him to prevent that. And so LeBron back cuts, Jackson spots it, nice little bounce pass, and we get a layup off of that. And when those bench groups, whether it's AD or the LeBron groups, that when there's less natural advantage, less like, oh, that guy can really hammer an advantage over this guy, using the system to be able to get you buckets is a really important part of that. So let's take a break here, come back, and keep talking about the Lakers' offensive performance.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goodbye. Dr. Goodbye is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Goodbye can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Goodbye works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Goodbye, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
It's done. Goal of the year, part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, we're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the bench production has been, I think, as expected in these games so far, whereas Denver actually outscored the Lakers in games one and game two. And it was not by a ton, but it was 12-6 in game two. And then I want to say it was 15-6 in game one. And then Denver's bench, you know, did I don't say almost nothing, but very little in game three and especially in game four. And so, you know, it's Peyton Watson and Justin Holiday playing limited minutes alongside Reggie Jackson and Christian Brown. Is one of those guys going to give the starters a lift in game five? Because the one thing you notice about Denver is, as great as the starting lineup is, maybe part of what was going on in game four is that they're just a little bit tired after basically carrying this entire load. And it's not that the Lakers are getting a huge contribution in terms of scoring from their bench, but they are getting more minutes. Overall, like Torian Prince played 30 minutes in game four and Vincent played 18. The leading Nuggets bench player, I think, was Watson, who played 13. And so they're getting kind of guys to come in and just take a little bit of a load off of Austin Reeves. And like Reeves is a whole nother thing. I think he could play more. He only played 30 minutes. I thought he played pretty well. And you know, there were some, I think, reasons for that. Russell was on a heater. And I think in the past, at certain times, Austin's always been the kind of guy to like, hey, he's cooking. And I don't know if that happened last game, but I just think that LeBron, AD are, of course, at the top of this. And then you've got Jokic and Murray with some support from Gordon and Porter Jr., who's been awesome throughout. But is energy going to be a thing at all in game five, or is Denver just going to be supercharged by, we need to get this done, like it's serious mode from the start with Jokic? Or are there players, whether it's Murray's injury that I know Darius is writing about for Three Things, are there things like that are going to make a factor other than just the, here's the adjustments to the coverages that you're running against Anthony Davis and how great he's been on offense. And here is the, we're going to blitz right. This action more, or like whatever those roads are. Those, are there still other adjustments that can really be made that both teams haven't seen? Or is it going to be some sort of a player energy and like individual guys stepping up type of a thing for game five?
I think it's going to be a matter of going to the right adjustments at the right time, right? Like where I think they know most of each other's cards that they play, but if they go to, say, you know, Gordon on AD for stretches, do we go to the stuff that beats Gordon on AD as opposed to the Gordon on Jokic stuff? Or do we linger in the Gordon on Jokic stuff for another several plays and it doesn't work quite the same? The question I wanted to kick back to you, Mike, and to you as well, D, is during the broadcast, they showed that crazy stat of the Lakers had been ahead at that time of about 75% of the series. And so in this idea of tonight's game, you know, Denver might really lock in and really walk away with the series and get the win. And they very well might, right? Of course, they should be favored at home to get the win. But this isn't like last year's series, right? What do you think it means to both of you guys that the Lakers have been ahead for about 80% of this series, if you think it means anything at all?
I happen to think it means something.
I do too.
To me, it's one of those things where the Nuggets have been Mariano Rivera and the Lakers have been that fantastic starter who is actually a seven innings pitcher. They're not the Nolan Ryan who is basically like, I'm going to pitch all of these complete games. In game four, the Lakers were able to do that, though. I think it shows that the Lakers fastball is as good as the Nuggets fastball. It's just that the Nuggets have more endurance and they have more stamina and they've got more sustainability within what they do. And I think it's a credit to Jokic and Murray as well, who is a particular type of player that I don't think we've seen a lot of in like recent history, like that sort of high level, almost all-star caliber player who it goes into like Super Saiyan mode, like down the stretch of these basketball games where he is just like an excellent closer.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you, Mike, that the Lakers have been up in so many of these games? Do you think it's just a matter of the Nuggets biding their time?
Well, this is really an extension of the conversation from last year when the Lakers got swept and they probably, you know, shouldn't have, or woulda, coulda, shoulda gotten swept when they played well enough to win at least a couple of those games. But Denver won all the games. So if I asked LeBron, I'm just trying to think, if I asked LeBron this question, I don't think that he would be, I think he would go on the side of, no, we lost the games. And like, sure, you could say from a narrative standpoint, are we playing better basketball than like the results show? Maybe, but it's about whether or not you win or lose the game. So it's.
Do you think it shows that you're closer to winning the game? Because I hope to have this stat before, from last year's series, but it was nowhere close. They were ahead of us for the vast majority of that series. So yeah, maybe there's a certain degree of coulda, woulda, shoulda in a game or two of that, but it was not this type of dynamic where Lakers were ahead for 80% of the time.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point though, right? Is that no matter which way it is, the result is still the thing that matters. And they are down 3-1 now going into Denver and into game five, instead of being 2-2. Or even 3-1, like if flipping the other way, if you're just looking at what the minutes show. But I also think that if we're emphasizing that, we're discounting how great the Nuggets are in crunch time. And that is the big reason why that the results end up, no matter what you do with Denver, when they really lock in and especially like are allowing Jokic to kind of manipulate the game in those situations, they are getting great shots throughout most of these fourth quarter stretches. And it's been more the third quarter than the fourth quarter, right? That Denver had been making their push. That was the game three narrative we had talked about, where the Lakers were just getting their ass kicked. And Austin Reeves said that it was basically atrocious, I think is the word he used in the first three. So that's not just crunch time, obviously. That's a coming out of halftime response and adjustment and energy shift and whatever it might be. And the Lakers addressed that excellently in game three. And now Denver outscored them by 2 points. But the Lakers had the 13-point lead, and so it was still at 11. So I'm not dismissing it at all, Pete. I'm just saying if I got to pick a side there, I'm still going with the result, and I'm giving Denver credit for you know what they do late in games.
Where are you at with it, Pete? You asked a question.
Again, I think that this series is going to reveal a whole ton of truth. I think that when you play the reigning champ and a team that's at the very least a championship contender for this year as well, you get to see a lot of what is true and what is not. And I think that so much through the losses, especially, is easy to focus on what the Lakers are not good enough at and where they are deficient. What I think it shows, though, is that they are on the right track and that they are much closer than they were last year to be able to get these type of wins. And the ways that the Lakers lose are it's a lot more unforced errors. So, for example, the Lakers starters are +4 through the first four games. The Nuggets starting group are +16. So obviously there are groups where their starters are playing mixed groups of ours and vice versa. But the fact that this is, if it's not the best starting five in the NBA, it's probably the second best. And the fact that the Lakers starters have been able to go toe-to-toe, that's not at all what it was in last year's series. Lakers were searching for different starting lineups almost every game. In 3 out of the 4 games, there was a different group. Not the case. And not every guy has played well necessarily individually within that group, but that the Lakers have a five that they can go to that can go toe-to-toe with Denver's, that's actually a great sign. The bench groups are not as together as I hoped they would be at this time of year. Part of that is injury, right? Part of that is because the lineups were not set into place early enough. Part of that is because I don't think that we took the process of it as serious enough to be able to get to the point where we're making that type of read where Jackson is making that play on the overplay in game 1 versus game 4. And so we'll see where this goes, D, but I do think that there's a certain, like, you are on the right track in a lot of ways. Don't lose the rope and don't take what's happened and be like, oh, everything has to change and we have to do this and that. I do think that there's like keep going down the path of improvement that you've been on.
Yeah, and this is where I think, to both of your guys' points, Mike's point about results is super important. Because at the end of the games, the Nuggets have been the better team in 3 of the 4 games. But from a process standpoint, the Lakers have done so much better from a process standpoint than they did last season. And in a lot of ways, for most of the game, have been the better process team than the Nuggets. What they've done is worked more. The fact, too, that the Lakers have led by double digits in every single game tells you that it's not like some fluky thing that they've been in these games.
Right.
For all the jokes that were had at the Lakers' expense about the most competitive sweep last season, it was a pretty competitive sweep. The Lakers were in a bunch of those games, and it reminded me somewhat of the 2009 finals that Mike watched up close, where Orlando was in a lot of those games against the Lakers. The Lakers were just the better basketball team, and that's how I felt about last year's matchup against the Nuggets. And so this season, though, it's been very similar, but in different ways. I want to do get back to a point that Mike made, though, earlier about support of the stars and who is getting that support most. So let's go to break here. And when we come back, I want to kick an idea to both of you. So Mike mentioned that Austin Reeves only played 30 minutes. A part of that was because the Lakers had a bench group in to start the fourth quarter, or at the very beginning part of the fourth quarter, in which AD came in fairly early because Denver went back to Jokic. It was the LeBron-led bench group with Hayes. And in that group, it was Prince, and it was D'Lo, and it was Gabe. The lineups got switched up, but the Lakers ended up playing a group with AD, LeBron, Prince, D'Lo, and Gabe. Darvin rode with that group for a while, and that group was playing well. And I specifically want to point out Torian Prince here. We have not spent a lot of time on Torian Prince this series, but Prince has been pretty good as a reserve player. And I thought he offered a different look in a positive way to what Rui was doing, which is like a much more assertive three-point shooter and someone who was really attacking closeouts and getting to the basket. I mentioned Austin's downhill ability earlier. It's different from Prince, but Prince has been attacking closeouts hard. He has been getting to the baskets. He had a couple of finishes inside, and he's been playing respectable defense and battling on the backboards. He had a couple of good box outs of Aaron Gordon, for example, where it's just like, oh, look at you. You're fighting.
Yep. Do your job. Yeah.
And so I just wanted to kick the idea of Taurean Prince to you guys as a complimentary player and someone who is allowing the Lakers to play some of these bench groups for longer, which I think is helping the starting group some.
Well, Prince has been very decisive in his role now, and he's figured out exactly what to do when he's on the court in those bench minutes. And quite simply, if he's open, he's letting it fly right away. And because he's not just letting it fly, but he's hitting some shots, he's getting closed out to immediately. And he's really good at, he knows the closeout is coming because of the way that he's been shooting. And so he's looking at the next level of the defense and setting up his Euro step. So like when you guys, of course, don't need this explained at all. But like when, if you know that your defender is coming right out to you, it's one of the easiest things to get by that player. So you're not mm-hmm. concerned about that. You know, in this, I always think of like Kobe and LeBron in a way of this where looking beyond at the next level, but LeBron might do it in a different way because LeBron isn't having somebody just completely fly out, you know, to prevent his three pointer. He's more just knowing he's going to get past this guy because he's LeBron and he's strong and he can get an angle or an edge. But like when a guy is redding, like just jumping right out to you, Prince just takes a little like boop, first step, and then when the help comes, he usually either does a Euro kind of like to his left and then goes back to his right and finishes with a little floater or finger roll, or he'll go the other way and like finish with his left hand off the glass if he's on the left side of the court. So I just think that's something that is always going to be pretty effective when you attack with that much decisiveness. And, you know, it's not like Pete, that's the only thing that he's doing, but I think that's an underrated part of his game.
No, very much so. Lakers had a lot of success with their Chicago action in that game, which is a lot of dribble handoff type of action. And the big area where Taurean is a better player than Rui on is moving side to side. If it's lateral movement involved, in which handoffs have a lot of that. And so he's done, I think, a great job of attacking those closeouts, getting into those Euro steps where it's like, they cut off my initial drive, but you know, he's able to kind of sidestep around it and has had several clever finishes around the basket in those type of situations. I do think that Denver's ball pressure and ball denial will go up quite a bit in those Chicago actions in game five. I think that's sort of the way that they had blown some of those up in earlier games, is just to put more pressure on the ball, more pressure off of it. But when they do that, Taurean's ability to kind of slither around has been super, super helpful.
So I want to throw something else at you guys. I was listening to some of the post game from Denver, and Malone specifically, just decrying how many points the Lakers were scoring on the Nuggets in the paint and challenging his players. So it was 70 points in game three, and the aforementioned in this pod, 72 in game four. And so going to Denver, you have to figure they're going to be looking at the film, and Malone's going to keep talking about it. And so Denver, I think, is going to basically say, this is not, we're not giving up 70 points in the paint. Mm-hmm. Selling out for this, you're going to have to make threes. What does that look like from what Denver could do, is going to try to do? And how do the Lakers try and counter that heading into this game?
I think you're going to see a ton of ball pressure and ball denial. That's what they've done in general. And again, now it becomes a matter of using that against them. And can the Lakers do that? In previous games, they ended up pushing out guys who were trying to attack off of the dribble. This is where I'm also like, a ball screen is not the solution to every problem. Is when they do that, it's more like, hey, they're pressuring on the perimeter. You've got to be able to, you know, give the ball up and use a swim move on a back cut. There's different routes to getting this. It's also part of the reason why seeing some of the buckets that LeBron got as that corner cutter off of the ball, like this is the way, right? When they choose to go that type of route, okay, you want to do that? That's fine. We're going to use that against you. And so I very much see how quickly can the Lakers get into that. I do think that they have answers to get into the paint whenever they want to, but Denver has different answers in terms of how they have to force the Lakers into a different path and how quickly the Lakers go, okay, they're doing this. Now we got to do that to be able to get into the paint rather than staying in the old thing they were doing is going to be super crucial.
Yeah. I also think though, too, that there's a lot that you can do to shrink the floor against a team like the Lakers, and the Lakers are going to have to hit shots this game.
Yeah, D'Lo, man, like D'Lo being on or not is such a huge component onto whether this whole thing works.
Yes, 100%. Also, too, is Austin going to get open threes? And if he gets them, will he make them? Is Rui going to make his open threes? Is Prince going to make his open threes? Are the Lakers going to take more threes? Or are they going to hunt interior baskets, even if the Nuggets are trying to shut that wander off? Mike mentioned earlier that Jamal Murray is listed as questionable coming into this game with a calf strain. We don't have any information about Murray. My guess is he's going to play and that he'll basically look fine. He finished the game. I included this in three things, but he was listed as questionable going into the March 2nd game that these teams played with a bum ankle. He had missed the game before that, and he came out and had 25 points and 11 assists and made a bunch of key plays down the stretch.
We all think he's going to play. It's just the question is he a little limited?
You know, 100%.
Like he looked in game four. Yeah.
And this is why I bring it up, Mike, is because the Lakers had great success attacking Jamal Murray in game four. And this was before the calf thing. They put him in ball screens with Austin Reeves. That was one of the ways that Austin got going. When he ended up on D'Lo, they put him in ball screens with D'Lo. And in those bench units, when Jokic was off the floor, Denver goes to a switching lineup a fair amount, and they put him in ball screen so that he ended up getting switched onto LeBron, and LeBron dribbled into post-ups against Murray pretty much every single time that he got Murray on him. And so, Pete, I understand what you're saying. A ball screen is not the solution for every problem. And against ball pressure, it could actually be the wrong thing to do because it's actually going to be harder to get a screen on that player. The one pushback I have against it is, who's Jamal Murray guarding? And he's going to try to ball pressure too, but he is not as good at that as the other Nuggets players. And he could be a little bit tested physically this game if his calf is not 100% right. And so I would still be playing matchup hunt ball a little bit at least to search out Murray and see if he is going to be effective at getting over screens, to see if he is going to be effective at denying the ball and all those quick twitch motions that you have when you have to get around a screen or get over the top or recover and then stand in strong against maybe LeBron James, who is trying to post you up, or recover and give proper back pressure against Austin Reeves, or all of the things that you get asked to do in a defense where you're trying to take away the paint.
And a central character in this is somebody we haven't brought up in over 30 minutes of the pod is AD, right? He's the guy that I think frees up opportunities. And even though he didn't get touches, Mike, in that fourth quarter, he was in the center of the action a lot more often than he had been in previous games. And so we've gone, 30 minutes without talking about him. Ties a career high with 23 rebounds. Has just been, arguably the second best player in the world in these playoffs behind Jokic. And so talk to me a little bit about AD's contribution.
I thought we were doing a whole separate AD pod just so we could properly sing his praises. But thank you for bringing it up in this context. And, the only other guys in the conversation would be Anthony Edwards, of course, who was just spectacular in that sweep. And I guess probably Jalen Brunson. But those are guys that have the basketball, on their own, basically every possession. And Jokic still gets the ball more than AD. So like AD is, when he's gotten it, has just been so lethal and incredible. I think that when you compare this even to last year's series, and like AD did a lot of damage offensively in last year's series too. He had the one game where he struggled offensively, and then we got right back to that ridiculous sort of AD's on one game, he's off the next BS. But that's only, of course, referring to his offense and whether or not he is being especially efficient or he's quote unquote demanding the ball. That has not come up, of course, at all in this game, in this series, because of the just totally clear level of consistency that he's had. And it's all been working. And to the point where, Darius, a lot of times you talk about AD and you talk about him as a rhythm player and a kind of a flow player. And like, and when he has the ball in his hands more, that's when the jumper comes around. And he's not shooting threes. He took four in game one, missed them all. He took one in game two and missed it. He hasn't taken one in games three and four. But he's shot at least 60% in games two, three, and four. And then in game one, he was 12 for 23. So 32 points, 32, 33, and then 25. And when the Lakers just didn't need to go to that offense as much when they were scoring fine in the fourth quarter against Denver. So the reliability of the free throws is also been there. He's shooting an excellent percentage. I think he's 83% for the conference finals, and doing this while banging more with Jokic than he would have to do in any regular season game. You know, when I'm trying to think if there's anybody else, like even when they played against Philly, Embiid's a lot of time at like the top of the key and he didn't play in the other game. Nurkic, sure, but not just different. Like there has been no physical ask of AD on the defensive end that's been as high, at least in my opinion, from what he's been asked to do in this series and to try and keep the entire Nuggets front line off the glass while maintaining the offensive efficiency. And this is why, like, I've just been trying to hammer AD's value so much. And Goose, have been trying to hammer his value so much throughout this whole season that it's like to be able to be that impactful offensively while carrying this massive burden defensively is not something that almost anybody else in the current playoffs is having to do. Just give me another player that's doing as much defensively. And if you want to give me like a Gobert, what is he doing on offense
right. Versus
what Anthony Davis is doing? It is a majorly different ask. And, you know, maybe Jokic is doing a lot defensively, but not in the same way that AD is. You know, he's just sort of solidly taking up his space.
If AD was getting fried by somebody the way that Jokic is getting fried by AD right now, the like vitriol that would be pointed AD's way is unbelievable. Like, he's averaging an efficient 30 a game, leading the playoffs in rebounding, 15.8 per game.
Yeah, is more than efficient. Yeah,
right.
On 30 points. Yeah,
a super high volume while easily doing the best job on Jokic by a mile of any Laker.
They haven't really gone to a different matchup on Jokic for any consistent amount of periods since game two. AD's been defending Jokic for the better part of 2.5 games.
It's like the second that they do, Darius, he just walks that player under the rim and scores.
Yeah, the Lakers have had actually their best defensive possessions against Jokic outside of AD when it's been LeBron who has been basically fronting him and really just sort of leaning on Jokic. And he got a tip-away steal, that led to a transition basket. And then he got that late on-ball steal against Jokic when he snuck attack him from the backside for that breakaway dunk with a little bit over 2 minutes left. But AD's been amazing. He's been Anthony Davis in the playoffs. That was nonsense last season about like, on again, off again, AD. It's just like, yeah, he was the best defensive player in the world by a magnitude. He was just amazing. And this series, I'm glad you brought it up, Pete, because I wrote about this in the recap as well, but he was fantastic as a screener for both Austin and D'Lo in the fourth quarter that allowed those guys to be on-ball threats. And so when you see LeBron get that corner cut lob, it's because AD is screening for D'Lo, and that's opening up the action. When you see D'Lo get into the paint and shoot that little floater off of the glass while keeping KCP in jail and Jokic is in no man's land and doesn't contest, that's because he's getting back to AD and he doesn't want to leave him because he's going to be an opportunistic scorer there. When you see Austin get into the paint and then shoot that little turnaround jumper or the short jumper, it's because look at Jokic. He is like fainting at Austin and trying to bait him to throw the pass because he's going to recover in order to get back to AD. All of those plays are plays where AD is critical to the Lakers scoring 2 points, but he didn't get a touch at all. And so he got one shot. He made it in the fourth quarter, but the rest of the time he is literally the son of the Lakers offense because everything was operating out of ball screens, and he was the one that was doing most of the work. Now, and then there was LeBron being LeBron, and he was amazing, and so I don't want to take away from what LeBron was doing, but for the half-court offense that the Lakers were running, AD was critical, and he didn't get a single touch at all, basically.
If I can make one last point on this and try to relate this to somewhat of what AD's doing, and then the flip side to what Jokic is doing on offense, whereas both of them are just scoring so efficiently in the paint and just finding ways to hurt a defense that way. The three-point shooting in this series so far, I think Denver has made four more threes than the Lakers. So they've made 37. The Lakers have made 34. Lakers are shooting 30%, and the Nuggets are shooting 27.6%, like so about 28%. So the three-point shooting, is this, Pete, how much of this is the teams are able to get to the paint on each other and score in there, and that's kind of a go-to, and therefore the threes are, it's just not as much of a focus? Is it because the closeouts and the attention to detail, these teams know each other, you know, they're for the most part, even though the Lakers have given up some wide open looks dealing with Jokic, they're doing a good job of getting there. And is this partly just playoff basketball versus regular season basketball? What is the takeaway for you on that?
Yeah.
And does that matter going into game five?
I think it's all of those things. And I think it's about 60% playoff basketball and just the nature of it. One of the few defensive adjustments, I've really liked our defensive game plan against them. And I've thought that the defensive execution for the most part, with the exception of rebounding, right, which has been something that we've hammered, has kept the Lakers in it in games where, like, if you score as you should, you have a chance to win that game. One of the few defensive adjustments I think we could make is they're really hurting us with Michael Porter Jr. coming off of screens. This is, again, one of the Rui is not as good laterally as he is, you know, north-south. That's one of the ways that they can punish that. Now, that's not entirely a Rui thing. We've seen it happen to Spencer and others. Really, the way to address that is to have your big come up higher. Now, if they don't want AD to show higher on Michael Porter Jr. coming off of screens because it causes problems behind him, I also totally get that. So if they don't make the adjustment, I'm not going to be raving mad about that or anything. But I do think that that is one area where Lakers can help adjust on that. But for the most part, Mike, I think that we're giving up shots to guys that we're okay with giving them up to. There was a Christian Brown corner three that he missed, that the way LeBron closed out to him was perfect in that, like, yes, this is a guy we're willing to let shoot threes, but how often over the course of this season did we see that happen? And it was like, come on, this is a practice jump shot. You still have to challenge to a certain degree. I thought LeBron really did that well. And so that to me, D, is I think this is just kind of the nature of the playoffs. But I do think that at some point, especially Denver most likely is going to really try to seal the paint tonight. And so I do think that they're going to be like, hey, D'Lo, you go ahead and knock down that three on the road, you know, with all the fans on your ass and all of that. So I do think that they are going to have to make some shots tonight.
I certainly agree with that, Pete. And for me, the Nuggets were last in three-point shooting attempts, and the Lakers were 28th during the regular season. If you give these teams an opportunity to attack in a different way, they will happily take it. Mm-hmm. In game one, Denver shot a ton of threes, and in game two, their volume was up as well. It's been down in recent games, and so if the Lakers end up being a high-volume three-point shooting team tonight, if those shots go in, you may be hearing another pod from us again talking about what's going to happen in game six, because the Lakers are more than capable of knocking down jump shots. It's just, this is going to be a raucous environment, and I can't wait.
Tiny quick thought is that, so Denver is feeling at least a small amount of pressure in this game that they weren't in game one. And they're feeling good. They're up 3-1. If they win this game, they're good. But like, when you have a closeout game five, you got to win that game. You know, because you don't want to go back to the other team's game six. And that does, I've seen it happen a lot of times with the Lakers being up 3-1. It does create pressure. And usually the home team takes care of business, but it's in the back of their mind if the other team starts to play well and the Lakers do it. D'Lo does hit a couple threes in the first quarter. That can create a certain level of pressure for them that, Pete, we just haven't really seen them in that situation in these last couple of years. So I'm curious if the Lakers can do that, if that will have any effect. It's not going to affect Jokic, but maybe it affects somebody else on their team.
I'd love to see us give them a push. Let's see if Lakers can stave off elimination again tonight and extend their season. We will be back tomorrow to discuss. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.